We go back out to that fan hotline, and that is where we find our guy Nick Faribault from PennLive.com. Nick will help us dive back into the Steelers talk here after the massive trade that was made Monday morning around 10:30 when the first news came out that the Steelers were acquiring Jalen Ramsey, and then it trickled out bit by bit that the Steelers were sending Minkah Fitzpatrick back in the deal. Then they were also getting Jonnu Smith as well as a late round pick swap. Nick, just as somebody who's a fan and covers the team, your initial reaction when you saw the array of tweets come in about the Steelers trade with Miami?
Yeah, I mean, the first one wasn't all that shocking. I knew that Jalen Ramsey was a possibility for them. I didn't necessarily expect it to happen, but I thought it was possible. I thought the shocking one was Minkah, man. And then you got the Jonnu part of it, and you're like, of course, it's Arthur Smith. I thought that was the funny part of it. It was like, oh, it's Jalen Ramsey for Minkah, and then Arthur Smith got his boy, too, along with it. But I thought them trading Minkah was by far the most shocking part of this entire trade. Trading one of their cornerstone pieces, they just don't do that very often, Donnie. And I think that is something that really is un-Steeler-like. The Ramsey trade in recent years, something like that with DK Metcalf, Minkah himself, and other guys has become a little more commonplace in the Steelers' kind of lexicon and moves, essentially. But trading Minkah Fitzpatrick, that one came out of nowhere. So I thought that was the most stunning part of the trade overall.
Does your gut feeling tell you that the Steelers won the trade?
I think they did. And I think it comes down mainly to what Ramsey brings. He's 2 years older than Minkah, so you have to factor that into the math. But he's so versatile, Donnie, in what he can do. He can play outside corner. He can play slot corner. He can play a little bit of safety. He can play dime backer. He can man up on tight ends. He can man up on receivers. He's like this ultimate chess piece type that they just have not had in the secondary in a very long time, if ever. And so I think that gives them so much flexibility to what they want to do schematically. Minkah was versatile. Jalen Ramsey's even more versatile. It is going to give them more man coverage upside. And then they add Jonnu Smith. I have my issues with the Jonnu Smith move and kind of his fit, but he's a good player still. So they really traded a safety who, while good, is no longer elite for a still very good to borderline elite corner and a Pro Bowl tight end. And corner is just more valuable than safety. It's easier to find safeties even this time of year. It's just a more valuable position, and you get more out of that. Positional value matters a lot in this trade, Donnie, and I think the Steelers did come out winners in this.
So you think Ramsey is still better at his position than Minkah Fitzpatrick is at his?
Yeah, I do. I mean, if you watch what Ramsey did last year, there was not a drop-off. I think there's people like acting like Jalen Ramsey's over the hill just because he's 30 and is going to be 31. He put up a very good season last year. He has never had a bad season in the NFL. He's been remarkably healthy at a position where a lot of guys aren't healthy. It's the most volatile position in football is cornerback, and Jalen Ramsey has had good years since he came into the league. Since his rookie year to now, Jalen Ramsey has really not had a bad year. And I think that matters a lot when you look at Jalen Ramsey. His consistency, his ability to stay healthy, his ability to condense multiple roles into one player is so valuable. And he's better than Minkah was. Now he has more splash play potential. His physicality allows him to blitz. He does so much over a football field on the back end that it is going to really change what the Steelers can do schematically. So, yeah, I do think he's a better player than Minkah is right now.
Yeah, and as dumb and as silly and simple as this sounds, I just feel like the Steelers won the trade on the premise that, hey, maybe they gave up a good player, but they got two good players in return. So they got two guys, they gave up one, and even if all the players are good, they got two good players out of this. That tells me they're on the plus side of this trade.
Yeah, I mean, they gave up a fifth-round pick. You know, I mean, not on 26, 27, so it's not going to affect your 2026 draft capital. We've talked about how important that is. And on top of this, Donnie, you know, the big thing is, I think, positional value. We talked about that, but corner is more valuable than free safety. Like, it just is. Especially one that you're paying a free safety $22.3 million on the cap. I mean, they're paying Minkah Fitzpatrick a lot of money. They're going to probably pay Jalen Ramsey just about as much, if not a little more, but he's a better player in a more valuable position, and he's going to allow them to do a lot more. And so it matters a lot, but they won off that. I don't think Minkah's game has a lot more longevity on it anyways. Even if Ramsey's 2 years older, I don't feel like Minkah's game is going to age super gracefully into his 30s.
You mentioned, too, that you didn't really care for the Jonnu Smith part of that, so I'll let you dive into it. What did you mean by that?
Well, think of it like this. If you are playing a lot of 12 and 13 personnel, Donnie, which they will, they're going to play a lot of two tight end, three tight end sets.
Yep.
You really need those guys to be blockers, to be threats. Because if you're going to put those guys in line and on the line of scrimmage, they got to be threats to block. Otherwise, the passing threat's neutralized heavily because you can play the passing down if you're confident in your linebackers and edge rushers to beat these tight ends super quickly and disrupt plays. And so if you put Jonnu Smith and Pat Freiermuth on the football field, I just don't feel like that's an advantageous grouping. Smith is an awful blocker. Freiermuth is better than Smith. He's still not a plus blocker. He's getting better and trying to improve that. I thought last year he took steps, so that would be welcome. But this, to me, speaks more to Freiermuth and Smith splitting more time with Darnell Washington playing a lot still, which isn't a bad thing, but Washington's going to have to play a lot for these 12 personnel looks to be super threatening. And I don't buy this idea that Jonnu Smith is this wide receiver two replacement. He's not that. The Steelers did have the least amount of targets to their wide receiver two in the NFL last year, so it matters a little less. But in terms of just personnel, how defenses are going to react to Jonnu, it's not going to act like a wide receiver. He's more of a yak threat type. He's kind of this gadget weapon, Donnie, that like gives them something they didn't have because they didn't have a playmaking tight end that has yak ability like Jonnu did last year. They didn't really have a yak threat at all last year in their offense. So that'll be new, and that's a good thing to have. It's just not a wide receiver two. So it doesn't fill the wide receiver two hole, and it's an odd fit. Like, defenses are going to respond to their 12 personnel with Freiermuth and Smith and laugh at. It's just not going to be a very effective kind of personnel grouping. There's 13 personnel groupings I think are going to be a little more awkward than people think. Smith can be fun, but there's a needle to thread here when you have three tight ends like this, even if it's a good room. Ideally, you would have two of those three guys be plus blockers. Only one of those three guys right now out of the Steelers' top three tight ends are plus blockers, and that hurts a lot of what you can do with play action, making the run look the same as the pass, making things threatening there. And so that's why I think the Jonnu Smith move is just a little bit awkward, because how do you kind of work this? And to be quite honest, Donnie, I just don't trust Arthur Smith to do it.
So it sounds like he's just a better version of Connor Hayward.
I mean, yeah, I think that's a fair way to go about it. I mean, he's not going to be, you know, this fullback type of player. You can split him out. He's more of a natural Y that can split out into the slot. He's a better route runner. But, like, people say, like, oh, he's coming off the best year of his career. But I think they ignore why. I mean, the Dolphins played so much like shotgun, empties, and that's kind of where Jonnu eats. He kind of eats when he's in space. The Steelers are going to be this condensed formation, under-center team that runs a lot of play action, and Jonnu's not going to get a ton of opportunities just to kind of eat in space. He'll be better in the screen game. That's one part I think that's actually going to be a real help. He will be able to elevate the Steelers' screen game with his yak ability, because he's so explosive of an athlete. But I do think the Steelers aren't going to give him the same amount of opportunities that the Dolphins did in space, which is where he ate. And kind of, you look at the route tree he ran, you know, seam routes, corner routes, posts, deep crossers. Some of that's in the Steelers' playbook, but I'm just not sure how much he's going to be able to do that without the space kind of recognition that they play with in Pittsburgh, because they play with so much 11 in Miami. They're going to play so much 12 and 13 in Pittsburgh. I don't see as a productive season coming this year for Jonnu Smith.
Who's the ideal receiver that you would add to that room?
I think right now, you know, the more I dive into it, the more I'm just kind of leaning towards Gabe Davis. I'm not a huge fan of Gabe Davis's game. I think he's a mediocre route runner. He's got some okay hands. He's not a great contested catch guy, Donnie, but he is a ferocious blocker. He's a high-character player. He can stretch the field, down the field. I like those parts of his game. He can be a quality XZ type of player, even though he's not an elite player. So, you know, he's going to be probably on the vet men too. You know, would you rather have that, or would you rather take a stab at a Keenan Allen or Amari Cooper, who are probably going to get significantly more money than that? And Davis just fits what they need the best, too. And so I think Gabe Davis is probably the guy I would lean towards of the available free agents. Ideally, you know, I would like to see them get a Romeo Doubs or a Dontayvion Wicks, but I don't know if those guys are available. Right now, to this point, I do not believe they are. If they do become available, I think they should become targets number one. But of the available pool in free agency right now, I think I lean slightly towards Gabe Davis, but none of these options are, you know, enthusing me or exciting me that much, Donnie.
Talking to Nick Farabaugh, he covers the Steelers for PennLive.com. Nick, it seems like they have an awful lot of confidence in Roman Wilson and Calvin Austin. I mean, Austin had a nice little season last year. Roman Wilson we saw for a half dozen snaps. Are you thinking those guys can take that next step and fill that void that they currently have?
I don't know if they can fill the void. I think they can be part of the solution. I think at this point, Donnie, until we know who's available, whether it's, you know, a Wicks or a Dubs or just someone else comes available, I think their best option is to cobble together different skill sets and make do with what they have. I think Calvin Austin, I like Calvin Austin. I do. I think he's a really good route runner. I think he's a good horizontal field stretcher. I think he can stretch the field vertically. He's a really underrated route runner. I like Calvin Austin. I think he's going to be limited by his size. I think he's a little limited by some of the kind of limitations that his catch radius brings naturally to his game. But he's a fun player. I think he can continue to tread water where he's at. I think he could get over 600 yards, you know, in a season in the right situation. So I like Calvin Austin. Roman Wilson's kind of an interesting player because he's just kind of this guy that runs deep crossers and over routes and just outruns guys. He's a very willing blocker. He's got great hands. He's a tough player. He's a high character type player. But I think, you know, I never loved Roman Wilson's game coming out of Michigan. I thought he was a raw route runner. I thought he was very slot specific, didn't have a lot of ability to beat press. His release package was a little soft at times. But this is the type of player that at least runs to coaching and has the ability to improve. But still, I think you're putting a lot. I think it's a big gambit to say that these two guys are going to make up your wide receiver two. If you could add another body there, a bigger body type, I think they can be part of the pieces that cobble it together.
Nick, do you look at the Steelers and think this is a team, at least for 2025, that is mostly all in or all in?
I think it's a team that wants to win a playoff game. But I'll tell you what, Donnie, this is not an all-in team. And here's why I say that. All-in teams do what the Rams did 2 or 3 years ago when they won the Super Bowl, when they traded all their draft picks and just kind of said, this is the year. All-in teams don't load up on their next year's draft picks. It's kind of weird, right? You know, they still have an incredible surplus of draft picks in the 2026 draft. The fact of the matter is they're not trading away 2026 picks. And that tells me that they're obviously eyeing that draft for the quarterback position and to help fill other voids on this team. I don't think it's an all-in team. I think it is a team that is desperate for a playoff win. But it falls short of all-in. The Rams are what an all-in team looks like. This team looks like one that is urgent to break a drought and has expectations for themselves to be better and use this year as something they can build with and trying to compete in a year where they are obviously looking towards the future for quarterback in 26. But I wouldn't call it all-in because there's a clear eye to the future. In terms of some of this, an all-in team trades away a lot of draft capital. That's not going to be what the Steelers do.
Well, I mean, I kind of feel some of the moves are all-in type moves. I mean, you bring in you wait around for a quarterback that's 41 who's playing in his final season. You make a big wide receiver trade and sign that guy. You make a big trade for a corner. You bring in another tight end who had a Pro Bowl season. I mean, they feel like as close to being all in as they could be. But just the fact that they have all of those draft picks, people are able to say, well, they're not. Look at all the draft picks they have in 2026 because of every compensatory pick known to man. If that's the case, why is there any sort of talk about a TJ Watt trade?
Well, because I don't think that's happening. There's talk of a TJ Watt trade because this contract situation is just more contentious than anyone ever thought it would be. TJ Watt thought it would be easy. The Steelers thought it would be easy, and then Myles Garrett shattered their world. I mean, that's the fact of the matter. Here's what I'll say, Donnie. This deal is going to make TJ Watt the highest non-paid quarterback in football. I'm feeling more confident in that than ever. The more I hear about this, I think the Steelers' offer is going to be more than Myles Garrett's money. The big question is going to be guaranteed money, the structure of the guarantees, and the language of the guarantees. He's going to want guarantees into year three, and that's hard to do because he's going to be 34 in that year. That is hard to guarantee money in the third year of a contract for a 34-year-old edge rusher. It just is. Myles Garrett's a year younger than TJ Watt. He has that ability. He's also a power rusher. TJ Watt's a speed rusher. Power rushers age gracefully. Speed rushers generally don't. It's just it's hard. There's risk inherently in this deal for the Steelers. I don't buy any talk of a trade. I think teams are kind of theorizing that. I don't think the Steelers are really interested in that at all. They're only interested in getting this done. But having that third year of guarantees is what's going to drag this out. I mean, Myles Garrett got into his third year. He had $88 million guaranteed. I mean, TJ Watt's going to want to at least equal that. And so it's going to be tough. I think the Steelers might give him the average per year, but I think they're going to fight tooth and nail for this guaranteed structure to not go into year three, because there's a lot of risk for the Steelers to pay and guarantee money to a 34-year-old edge rusher.
See, that's why it feels weird to me, because, like, why would you make the trade that you did on Monday and then even have that floated out there? You know, both of us can think, yeah, it's probably not going to happen. We'd be stunned if it happened. But that would just make zero sense to me if it did.
Right. It makes no sense. Granted, Donnie, I mean, I think one thing about the Steelers this offseason has been this half-in, half-out mentality. It's been wanting to try to compete this year while also trying to focus on the future in some pseudo way. It's been kind of weird, right? They've made a lot of win-now moves with Darius Slay signing instead of guys like DJ Reed or Byron Murphy or Charvarius Ward. They focused a lot on this year, and they've also focused on hoarding draft capital. But if you're focused on winning this year, then, I mean, let's be real. It doesn't matter what happens if they don't get TJ Watt's contract situation hammered out. Like, it is an absolute abject failure. If the Steelers have declared that they're going to try and win this year, which they have, they're going to try and win this year, you have to have TJ Watt there. It makes zero sense for them to not have TJ Watt there. And so it kind of just throws a wrench in everything. And so it makes no sense. You know, that feels to me, you know, when you're having reports floated out there, teams are thinking about a trade, that rings a little bit of agent kind of speak there a little bit. You know, TJ Watt's team trying to put some pressure on Pittsburgh and trying to get them to kowtow a little bit. But man, it's a situation that I think is a more contentious situation than the Steelers thought it would be. This one's not going to be easy. It's not going to be easy to get done.
Do you also anticipate him being absent from camp entirely, opposed to the last time where he did the hold-in method?
Yeah, I think it depends on where they're at. I do think the Steelers' offer, here's the thing, you know, they can't be that far apart on average per year. They really can't, because it's probably between like 38 and 41, 42 million. So the average per year number is not the issue here. It's the guaranteed money. And so if they are close, I think he probably shows. I think right now, though, I mean, it sticks where it is right now. I think it's probably likely that he no-shows a little bit, maybe shows up at some point when they get closer. But he's trying to send messages to the Steelers. That's why he didn't show up to minicamp. That's why we keep seeing this kind of floated into the public eye. I mean, remember back in like March after Garrett signed, when J.J. Watt, his brother, went on the McAfee show and said, if you wanted a hometown discount, you should have signed him last year. That's a message probably that TJ also shares. And so there's a kind of there's a tension here. I don't necessarily think the Steelers share, but I think from the TJ Watt side of it, there is some tension here. I think there's a lot of work to do left on this deal. There's a lot of things to hammer out still. I think they'll probably be closer when training camp comes around, and that might allow him to show up. But I mean, if things stick where they are right now, yeah, I wouldn't be shocked if he doesn't show up. In fact, I'd probably expect he would.
And what happens if a Micah Parsons deal gets done in this time?
Yeah, that could blow everything up for them. Now, here's the thing. I don't think TJ Watt has a real kind of idea or argument to say I should be paid $43 million per year. But he might. The issue will be if the guaranteed structure flies in the face of everything. What if Parsons gets guarantees into the fourth year of his deal, and he's young enough to where that's feasible? That would absolutely crush the Steelers' ability to hold out in that third year. TJ would be like, well, I don't care about 34. I want that third year. And so Parsons, Hutchinson, Hendrickson, all these deals are going to kind of float around and are going to give the Steelers a kind of floor if they get signed before Watt. But that's why the Steelers really have an urgency to try and get this done. I mean, the Steelers don't want to wait much longer on this, but they also have to kind of balance this tightrope act to not try and give TJ Watt all these guarantees, because I think that's a risky deal for them. This is not like the last time in 21 where the Steelers kind of knew they were going to get elite play from TJ Watt. There's real risk he falls off in the middle of this deal. And that's why they're going to be a lot stingier this time around than they were in 2021.
It sounds like you, just as a fan and follower of the team, have some fear of that too, Nick.
I mean, I do, Donnie, because we're talking about a guy that's won off his explosiveness, his first step, his ability to bend corners. He's a historically outlier speed rusher. He wins with a rip and dip move, and you just don't see a lot of guys do that. Like, Myles Garrett's game at age 33 is probably going to be very good still. You look at historically elite edge rushers and how they age. They age gracefully, but most of them are power rushers. So TJ Watt's going to have to, like, reinvent his game. Can he do it and become a power rusher? Sure he can. He's strong. He has moves in his bag that he hasn't pulled out in years. And he doesn't move around the formation. He's got to start to move around the formation. I think what we saw late in the year, you know, TJ was dealing with a thumb injury and an ankle injury. But, you know, that could very easily be what 34-year-old TJ Watt looks like if he doesn't move around and doesn't get real power in his game. And so he's going to have to reinvent himself. TJ can do that. I have no question that there's a possibility TJ Watt just reinvents his game from speed rusher to power rusher and becomes a different type of player. He's a relentless worker, he's strong, and he's the type of guy that has the right wiring to do that. But there's inherent risk that he might not be able to, and if he doesn't, at age 34, TJ Watt just isn't going to have the explosiveness he does now, and naturally that's going to have a sharp decline in his game. So there is risk. I think it's fine. If you get 2 years of guaranteed money, I sign that deal, and in year three you have an out if you're Pittsburgh, they're fine there. But year three, I think they're taking a big risk, man.
Do you expect them to move him around a lot more in the defense?
I do. I expect them to move him around. I expect them to move Alex Highsmith around, Nick Herbig, Sawyer now. I think they're going to move all these guys around. They have to. They can't stay static. These guys were teeing off on TJ Watt, just lining up, you know, in condensed formations, double chipping him. They were doing all these different things to slow him down because they knew he would be a wide nine over the right tackle. We're talking about a guy that only needs to go to the other side. He needs to be over the interior. They need to run stunts. They need to loop him around. They need to kind of load his side sometimes, have somebody rush off his side, or at least the other side, so they have to slide protections and can't have the running back and tight end just sleep over him. I mean, this spot drop cover three, not moving your front, it was so vanilla last year. They put Watt in a bad position to try and have any productivity. So, yeah, they definitely need to move him around, and I expect them to do that. I think that's one thing they're going to do this year is try and give teams more looks defensively, throw them off.
Did you get the sense, we're going back to Minkah Fitzpatrick here, this was something that I brought up with Kabali the other day. Did you get the sense that they had no intention on re-signing him? Because that's what Mark said. He said that was one of the big reasons why they felt this was the right time to make the move.
Yeah, I don't think they were going to resign him at where he was going to play. In fact, Donnie, you look at the structure of his contract. I mean, he'd had another year like he's had the last two, whether that was because of his injuries, like it wasn't 23, or that he's done that many splash plays. I mean, it was far likelier he was going to be cut next year than even beginning the 2027 deal, right? And so I think when you look at kind of Minkah's game, elite free safeties, you know, I hear this thing that people say elite free safeties nowadays because we see a lot of quick game and we see the average depth of target, average air yards per attempt falling in the NFL, that elite free safeties don't make plays as many splash plays they used to when Minkah was acquired. Well, go look at Jesse Bates' profile with Atlanta the last 2 years. 6 interceptions, 4 interceptions his first 2 years, and then 3 forced fumbles, 4 forced fumbles. Jesse Bates is the kind of class of the league at free safety, and he continually makes plays. The fact that Minkah didn't, he's a good player. He erases parts of the field. But to be getting paid $22.3 million on your price tag, and then even more next year, you have to be making splash plays. You have to be making picks. Forced fumbles. Minkah just wasn't doing that. So, yeah, I don't think they were going to resign him. I don't think his future was for long here unless he had a really big bounce-back year. Would stun me if he has a great year in Miami. But the Steelers didn't see that production in terms of the splash plays, and they had to evaluate the price tag.
What part of Juan Thornhill's game do you like the most?
I really like his range and his ball skills. He's a really rangy free safety. And he's got some really good instincts. The issue with Juan Thornhill is largely injuries and tackling. His tackling last year was atrocious, Donnie. He has been hurt the last 2 years. He's played 11 games each of the last 2 seasons with calf injuries and other soft tissue injuries. He played through a shoulder issue last year that hurt his tackling ability. So maybe that's something to think about. But he took bad angles. He didn't wrap up very well. He would fall off tackles, but I do like the coverage part of his game, which is where I think he will thrive. If he can stay healthier, maybe they can find something here, because when he was with Kansas City, he was a versatile chess piece that was kind of a walking big play, a walking ball magnet at times in that defense. If they can find him and find that one Thornhill and have him stay healthy, they could have a hidden gem there, but I'm certainly not super confident in that. And if I were Pittsburgh, I'd be looking at guys like Julian Blackman on the open market just to give them some more comfort there at free safety.
Nick Faribault, check out his stuff, penlive.com. Nick, thanks for taking the time, man.
Thanks for having me on, Donnie. Appreciate it as always, man.